By official economic measures, this country has emerged from the Great Recession. But recovery is not being felt in many neighborhoods in large and mid-sized cities. Since 2000, the number of people living in high-poverty slums has nearly doubled. Just what's behind this resurrection of America's slums? Ilana Samuels explores this question in her piece for The Atlantic, and she is with us now. Ilana, how do we define slum, the high-poverty area?
Sure. A high-poverty area is a census tract where 40% or more of families are living in poverty. So, you know, that's certain income level, but it's kind of less than the majority of people in the census tract are living in poverty, but still a large number of them.
And here we are, 50 years after President Lyndon Johnson declared the war on poverty, and it seems that we sure have been sliding backwards since 2000.
That's right. I mean, I think one of the most interesting things is that you see the concentration of poverty really growing. So, you know, before there might have been poor neighborhoods scattered around cities. Now it's really concentrated in cities and inner suburbs and even outer suburbs. But you see neighborhoods that are extremely poor. There's not very much income diversity in them.
And the numbers that you give us in your piece for TheAtlantic.com are pretty mind-blowing. You say from 7.2 million to nearly 14 million people living in high-poverty neighborhoods?
That's right. And remember, those are the people who are living in census tracts where 40% or more families have income levels below the federal poverty threshold. So that doesn't necessarily mean there are, you know, more poor people out there. It just means they're living in closer quarters in areas that are, you know, low opportunity. There's probably not going to be as good schools, as good transit, as good jobs in those areas, which is, of course, a cycle, and people are stuck in these areas.
And as you say, the highest number of Americans living in high poverty neighborhoods ever recorded.
That's right. And I think, you know, a lot of cities across the Rust Belt, especially, you know, in Syracuse, for instance, Syracuse, New York, 65% of the black population lived in these high poverty areas.
Well, in fact, you gave us some pretty striking numbers about Detroit and the percentage of the black population living in high poverty areas compared with 2000.
Yeah, it's crazy. In Detroit, 57.6% of the black population lives in high poverty areas. That's up from 17.3% in 2000. And something that's interesting about Detroit is it's not just African Americans who are living in high poverty areas. More than half of the Hispanic population of Detroit is living in high poverty areas. That's up from only 8.8% in 2000. And even the white population, about a third of the white population is living in high poverty areas, up from 6% in 2000. So in Detroit, you really see alarming leaps across different ethnic groups.
And as you point out in your piece, we as a nation, we had been making pretty substantial progress in getting people out of high poverty areas, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you saw in the early part of the 2000s, a lot of programs to dismantle these giant housing complexes that you see in a lot of big cities like Chicago, New York, and move people to other areas. Some attempts to move people to the suburbs, but mostly just to kind of dismantle these big housing projects and say, you know what, here's a voucher, go live somewhere else. The problem with that is that a lot of people don't really know where to move, and they'll move where their friends are, they'll move close by so they can still go to the same school, same church, and so that hasn't really been that effective of a program.
Tell us about what we're seeing across the nation in terms of the zoning ordinances.
Yeah, you see a lot of very restrictive zoning ordinances, especially in suburbs and especially in far out suburbs. You know, these suburbs will pass rules that say you have to have a house of a minimum size, or you can't build an apartment building, or, you know, something will come up before the zoning board for an affordable housing development. And there's just a lot of opposition to it. People have this idea of what they think affordable housing is, which isn't really what it is anymore. But they have this idea of these big hulking projects and, you know, crime. And it's really not what it looks like, but they will vote it down. And any politicians that support affordable housing or low-income housing will most likely get voted out of office. I think something that you're seeing in Detroit and in a lot of kind of bigger cities is people that can will move out to these suburbs where they can afford it, you know, where they don't mind, or they're actually looking for places that kind of exclude poorer people. And then you have kind of the middle class people moving out to where they had lived, and just the people who can't move are the ones who are left.
And thus we get this concentration, this big growth in areas that we could consider slums. And as you point out in your piece, it is illegal in this country to say we don't want fill in the blank, African Americans, Latinos, fill in the blank, living here. But it's not illegal to pass those zoning ordinances that, in effect, keep out the people who are low income.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what will be interesting to see is there's a big Supreme Court decision this year about disparate impact, which is basically policies that have a disparate impact on minorities in the housing realm. The Supreme Court basically said that people could bring lawsuits over disparate impact in housing. And I think it'll be interesting to see in the upcoming years whether, you know, lawyers really take this to court and say, this isn't fair, these zoning ordinances aren't fair, this isn't fair the way that people are being segregated, you know, so long after the Civil Rights Act. So I think that will be something to watch, and hopefully they can make some progress on that.
I'm speaking with writer Ilana Samuels, whose piece, The Resurrection of America's Slums, is at theatlantic.com. A look at what one expert called a durable architecture of segregation that seems to be pretty baked into this country now. And Ilana, you know, I think about it, when we see the images of riots and protests, especially this past year, cities like Ferguson, Missouri, or inner city Baltimore, we know that it is sparked by confrontations with police, but you're hearing that this is also really tied to the soaring numbers of these low-income impoverished areas. Talk a little more about that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, you see these suburbs on a lot of cases that have a lot of poverty in them. And we used to think of suburbs as, you know, these places where there's a lot of opportunity. There's kind of a way for people to get out of poverty. And that's just not the case anymore. And I think you're seeing a lot of frustration in this, that people, you know, own houses or move to the suburbs and they see themselves surrounded by poverty again. And the problem with that is, of course, you know, when you're surrounded by poverty, there's really no way out. You know, there's the schools are not as good. You don't see as many people with opportunities. You don't have the contacts to get jobs and scholarships and all that stuff. And so I think you're seeing a lot more awareness that, hey, this is not the way it's supposed to be, and no one really seems to be doing anything about it.
What kind of solutions are being offered? Because it seems this is pretty well baked into America in 2015.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are some cities doing some interesting things. Chicago is one of them. Basically, Chicago has pulled together, I think it's about 12 counties in the Chicago metropolitan area, and they combined all of their housing vouchers, and they basically combined their public housing programs. And so now if you are on public housing or looking for affordable housing in Chicago, you're not going to just be put in these high poverty areas. You're going to be helped to find housing somewhere else, and you're going to perhaps live in a development that was built by some of these housing authorities in a higher income area, which the Chicago area hopes will lead to more opportunity. That's one option, is to kind of push mobility and try to help as many families as possible move to higher opportunity areas. There is an argument that we should just invest a lot more in these high poverty areas. And you're seeing places like Austin, for instance. East Austin, it used to be a very high poverty area. Now it's becoming kind of gentrified and hip. But you're seeing a lot of people try to invest there as well and saying, look, we can make this neighborhood better by focusing on it and by putting in some programs for education, for, you know, ESL classes. And so, you know, there are two approaches. One is based on neighborhood development. One is based on mobility. And I think both of those can work if we spend enough resources on them.
Ilana Samuels, her piece, The Resurrection of America's Slums, can be found at theatlantic.com. Ilana, thank you so much for talking with us today.
You're welcome.